Welcome down to Politics of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, a production of the Journal Sentinel and JS Online. I'm David Haynes, sitting in for Greg Borowski this week. I'm joined today by Mary Spacuzza and Dan Bice in Milwaukee and Jason Stein in Madison. Here's a look at this week's show. There appears to be a deal to build a new arena in downtown Milwaukee. Related to that, more details have emerged about the potential for development near the new arena. The state budget has hit a few snags. We ask, where is Governor Scott Walker this week, and what do his frequent travels mean for the budget process? State Democrats are gearing up this weekend to pick a new leader, and we take your questions. So let's go to the news of the day. Dan Bice, there's an announcement coming at 3:15 this afternoon about how to pay for a new arena for the Milwaukee Bucks in downtown Milwaukee. We're going to go first to a video. Mary Spacuzza spoke with Governor Walker in Waukesha earlier this morning. Here's what the governor had to say.
So at 3 o'clock, there's an announcement about the Bucks in Madison.
Yeah, again, our hope has been for weeks now that we'd find a point where we could bring the city of Milwaukee, Milwaukee County, and the state of Wisconsin together, along with the private sector. We know one thing for sure, and that is if we don't do anything, we know the NBA Board of Governors has said that they'll move the Bucks, and that would cost us over the next 20 years, it would cost state taxpayers over at least $419 million in terms of the loss of the base revenue that we get from the NBA players' expected future growth, and the cost of the BMO Harris-Bradley Center would be on the taxpayers because of the way the law is. So our goal along has been to find a way that protects our financial interests as state taxpayers, to cap the state's involvement, to cap the taxpayers' involvement, and ultimately do so in a way that not only provides a new arena and new value to Milwaukee, but provides a greater return on the dollar for state taxpayers. And that's what we'll be talking about hopefully later today if everything works out.
So, Dan, what do we know about this deal so far?
They've been negotiating over the last 12 hours the final details of the bill. And the overall framework remains in place. It's a mix of borrowing, bonding, debt collection by the Wisconsin Center District, the state, the city, and the county. But what they've added at the last second is they've tried to make it clear that the Bucks will be responsible for any cost overruns. And the way of doing that is that they've capped the total amount of borrowing by all public entities at $250 million. This is an effort to make sure that something like Miller Park doesn't happen, where there were extensive cost overruns, and it was the taxpayers who ended up picking up those costs.
So as you pointed out earlier this week, though, that will be more than $250 million when you include interest costs. Right.
Right?
It's
when
more
you,
like
when
$400 million.
Yeah, when you include the interest, particularly on the Wisconsin Center interest bonds, because the payments on those don't start until 2028, and during that whole time, interest will pile up.
Okay. Jason Stein in Madison, the leadership seems to still have to do a fair amount of selling. Dean Knutson was quoted in one of our earlier stories today saying he hadn't even seen the deal yet.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, this deal is an agreement between major players on what they want to see passed by the legislature. This is not an agreement, not yet, among lawmakers on what they want to pass.
And will Democratic votes be needed to pass it, do you think?
That's an open question. That's certainly very possible. If it remains in the state budget, obviously no Democrat is going to vote for the Republican budget. It's possible, though, that this proposal either gets pulled out as standalone legislation or that there's a floor vote to add it to the budget as an amendment that might pick up some Democratic votes and allow some Republican lawmakers to get off the proposal. There's a lot of Republicans, about 2 out of 3 Republicans in the Senate who want to see that happen.
Let me go to Mary Spacuzza. But at last count, I think it was 12 of 19 Republican senators said they'd like to yank this out of the budget. Why would they want to do that politically? What's the motivation to do that? And what did the governor say about it this morning?
I think, you know, it could, as Jason's as Jason said, it could mean that Democrats would actually vote for it because it's very unlikely they're going to be voting for the budget. Mm-hmm. So if it was pulled out of the budget, that would prevent some Republicans from taking some tough votes, take the pressure off of them, and allow Democrats to support it. Governor Walker said this morning he was open to it being taken out of the budget. He seemed less concerned about the process and just about getting the deal done.
But just to be clear, most of the proponents would want it to be in the budget bill because it's an easier vote. A majority of Republicans are going to vote for the budget bill, so it's a lot easier to get
that
through. If it's pulled out as a separate item, then the whole the prospects are a little more dicey.
Could get killed, yeah.
So quickly, Dan, in just a few seconds, you had that story earlier this week about the cost to the taxpayers actually being $400 million. Did that complicate negotiations?
Well, I think those who were opposed to it, in particular some conservatives who were opposed to the deal, they felt like some of the numbers were not put out there at the very beginning, and these are slowly being trickled out there. I think it allowed critics to use that to try to build opposition to it. And I think it was part of this process where there's this vacuum of power without Scott Walker being there, where people are looking out for their own self-interest and is this a good vote for me or not?
Yeah, we're going to talk about that in a minute. First, let's talk about something related to the arena deal. And that's the question of what's going to happen to this land near it in the Park East Corridor. There were developments this week related to that land, and I spoke with business reporter Tom Dakin earlier about that. Here's what Tom had to say. And now we're with Tom Dakin. Tom is a business reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He covers commercial real estate and development. And Tom, I want to talk about a proposal that the Milwaukee County Executive Chris Abele just put on the table this week. He wants to sell a large chunk of the Park East Corridor, which would be near the new proposed arena, for a dollar. Tell us what that proposal is all about.
The proposal would sell about 10 acres within the Park East Corridor. This is all west of the river between Juneau and Highland Avenues, going west of North Old World 3rd Street, all currently vacant, and they would be sold for a dollar. And what's interesting about that, there's actually, we just reported today on Thursday that there are county appraisals that were conducted in 2014 that show that land has got a market value of $8.8 million.
$8 million.
So that's a considerable write down, obviously, in the value to basically give it away.
Right.
Abele's proposal says they're doing this for two reasons, that is selling it for a dollar for two reasons. Number one, it's to recognize the fact that there are certain soil conditions involved. There's debris, I think,
including
former freeway piers, that have been buried underground.
They're still there. So it's costly to clean up.
Right. And also, just the idea that something like this would lead to, if all these developments occur, office buildings, a supermarket, other stores, apartments, that it would generate a considerable amount of development and jobs and creating property tax base for the county as well as jobs for people. That's the theory anyway.
I think there's some assumption that the new arena, if it's built, will lead to some new development. But how real are these plans by the Bucks Owners Group, which is the entity that would take possession of the land?
Correct. Yeah. How real are they? They're conceptual. I mean these are plans, and that's not to say they haven't put some thought into them. They have, but conceptual plans are just that. They're concepts. They're ideas. You really have to start somewhere, and this is the level at which you start. And if it progresses, you obviously create more detailed plans and get things firmed up. I guess the more pertinent question, one we tried to answer this past Sunday with our late colleague Don Walker and Bill Glauber writing the story, is to what extent is there demand for these types of uses?
Mm-hmm.
We are seeing more apartments being built in downtown Milwaukee, including west of downtown, because there's a shift in preference for millennials to live in urban areas and to rent and not own. We haven't seen a lot of office development in downtown, very, very little of that occurring west of the river in recent years. And frankly, it does beg the question, does something like an arena help stimulate demand for those types of developments? I think what the Bucks would argue is that by virtue of having a new arena, you create an environment where somebody running a company would want to be close to that. Mm-hmm. They would want to have their workforce, their employment there for purposes perhaps of of recruiting and retaining talent, particularly younger talent, not people like you and I, Dave, people much younger than us. but that's
speak for yourself.
That's the theory anyway. And there is perhaps something to this. Developer by the name of John Hammes is currently trying to do offices on a Parkey's parcel east of the river.
Nearby.
That doesn't have anything to do with this, but it's in the same general area of downtown, and I think he would tell you those are some of the factors that he's looking at in terms of trying to possibly attract tenants to that development if it goes forward.
Okay, two questions. Is there some precedent for basically giving land away? And two, how is the county board, especially given its relationship with the county executive, not always great, expected to react?
Yeah, on your first question, this would be the first time the county has taken parcels in the Park East and essentially given them away. So far, the county has sold two parcels, one for the Milwaukee School of Engineering parking structure and soccer field, one for the Avenir apartments and retail development.
In both
cases, the county got $2.7 million for each of those two separate blocks.
Okay.
I mean, certainly we have plenty of cases where cities, counties have offered to give land away in return for development. That in and of itself does happen from time to time. It hasn't happened yet with the Park East Strip. As to your question about the county board, they don't get along. I mean, Abley and the county board do not get along with each other. There are members of the county board who are still unhappy about having their power curtailed through the state legislative process that Abley helped initiate. But they still have some power, and one of those is approving land sales.
And
they can say no.
They'll have to approve this. Tom, thanks so much.
You bet. Thanks, Dave.
So, Mary, let me turn to you. There's this issue of Governor Walker's travel that's come up from time to time related to his presidential ambitions. So,
time to time, you mean the entire year so far this year?
Frequently.
Among certain groups of people. So, Mary, where's the governor going to be in the coming days?
He just got back from Orlando. He was at Governor Rick Scott's event there on Tuesday. Tomorrow he'll be in North Carolina for a state Republican event. Then heads to Iowa for Joni Ernst's Roast and Ride, I think that's what it's called, and some other events. And then next week he'll be heading off to Canada for a trade mission, his fourth trip out of the country, including three trade missions so far this year.
Okay. Jason, let me turn to you. There have been some questions raised about whether the governor's absence has had any impact on the legislative process. What are you picking up on that?
Well, I mean, look, the governor has never been, he's always been a big picture policy person as opposed to someone that gets really into the weeds. He leaves that more to his staff. And so I think he's said, well, look, I'm still in touch with my staff the same way that I always have been. What I do hear from Republican lawmakers, though, is that it can be very important for when a governor or his representatives go to a lawmaker and say, look, your governor, your Republican lawmaker, your Republican governor wants you to vote for this budget, it can be tougher making that case if the lawmaker has a perception that the governor is not around. So again, you know, a lot of this is not just what the reality of the governor's involvement is. A lot of it, too, is what is the perception of lawmakers.
But it can be the reality, too. I mean, there's very much a feeling with people in the legislature, people all around the state, that we're an afterthought, that his primary focus is on Florida, Canada, North Carolina, South Carolina, New Hampshire, all of these other places. And, you know, the governor traditionally has called legislators in and said, you need to get this done. And he's been largely absent on the Bucks Arena proposal.
When you say the governor, traditionally, do you mean Governor Walker or governors in general?
Governors in general. I mean, that's the power of the office.
Has that been Walker's operating?
When the governor's not a floor beneath you with the threat of calling you in and saying you need this done, legislators start looking out for their own interests. And so it's some of these votes that they're being asked to make are some tough votes. Do I cut the budget for my local school district or not? If you don't have the governor saying we need this deal to get done, it's a lot easier to say, well, I think I'm going to restore that money to this. Or with this Bucks Arena, if you're out state, your constituents don't really care too much about the Bucks. There's not much pressure on you to vote in favor of this. But if the governor is there and saying, we need this, we need the entire package, you need to be there for it, it puts pressure on them that they don't feel otherwise.
So no offense, Jason, but Skyping in won't cut it?
No, Skyping in won't cut it.
All right, so on the Bucks deal, what does Walker have to do to get this done?
I think it would be impressive if there were a headline out there that says the governor cancels a trip to Iowa to make sure this deal gets done, because right now there's very much a feeling that all of these proposals are an afterthought, that the state is second on his mind, that his main focus is on, you know, whether he's had any missteps with the national media or anything like that. So I think he's got to be here, he's got to make his presence known, and he's got to make a commitment to this proposal.
So we had a question from a reader that's related to this, and obviously a supporter of the governor, and he says, hey, we never asked these questions about Tom Barrett when he was missing in action in the city of Milwaukee when he was running for governor. What's the difference here?
Between Barrett and, I mean, there were actually questions raised about Barrett on various deals, but it's still a dramatically different thing, because the interest of the state influences Milwaukee. With the governor, we've all noticed that there's these two tracks with the governor, that he's doing very well nationally for the most part, but here the voters have noticed that his absence, and his numbers have reflected that.
Mm-hmm. But realistically, what can you talked about this a little bit, but I'm going to push back a little bit on it. Realistically, it's the legislature's job to get this budget done. I mean, it's the governor's budget.
Whose budget is it? The governor proposes, they're the ones who tinker with the thing.
Okay.
And, you know, that it's been traditional that the governor stands up for his budget and he makes sure the major elements are in there. But week after week, what are the main headlines? It's this proposal by Walker has been ditched. Mm-hmm. This proposal by Walker has been ditched. In fact, there's an ad on TV running by a national group pointing out all of the things in his budget that the legislature has dropped. And on these things, as I said, there's no pushback. There's no pressure for them to make sure that they support all of the elements in his budget.
He's ultimately the one signing it after all, so.
And I mean, I guess if I could jump in,
I will say
with Dan that there is no substitute in state politics for a governor sitting down with you across a table, across a desk, looking you in the eye and saying, you know, Dave, I need you to do this for me. So again, I think he's been, you know, he's certainly been engaged in many ways. But, you know, for instance, when this thing happens over the weekend and in Canada, if he's in Iowa and in Canada, there won't be face-to-face pressure.
For the past week and a half, we've been told there's an announcement coming tomorrow, there's an announcement coming tomorrow, there's an announcement coming tomorrow. Yeah. When does it eventually happen? It happens when Scott Walker comes back here, gets everybody together at the governor's mansion and says, let's get this deal. Someone there comes up with the idea of capping the public borrowing, and now we've got an announcement at 3:15. He's able to galvanize and put people together and make a decision on this.
So let's transition to our next segment, and that is, again, related to the state budget. Governor Walker said initially, before the budget process began, that he wanted this basically done in record time. And there was a lot of speculation then that had to do with his presidential ambitions, and it may well have. But, Jason, that process has gotten slowed down a little bit in the last week or so. What's going on?
Well, that's gone. You know, really, no one ever expected that could happen, because over the last two budgets, Scott Walker and Republican lawmakers really were getting the budget done as fast as it had been in a generation, in at least a generation in Wisconsin politics. So no one expected them to be able to do it faster. And in fact, they will not do it as fast this time. I mean, now the only question is, will they get the budget done before the current budget expires on June 30th or not? It's not a catastrophe if they don't get it done by June 30th. We'll just continue on under the provisions of the current state budget for however long we need to. But it typically takes a while before we really start feeling any ill effects from that.
So now that we have an arena deal, is it smooth sailing from here on in?
Not at all. Really, the big problem for lawmakers and the governor has been the roads budget. You know, paying for our transportation fund that builds and maintains roads and bridges around Wisconsin. And At this point, really realistically, there is as much as $1 billion of difference between the governor, Republican leaders and rank and file Republicans over how much do we want to borrow to build these roads.
So the political backdrop behind this is that the governor said he won't announce that he runs for president until the budget is done. When he said that, there was some sense that there was a need to get this budget done quickly. But he's done so much better than expected in running for president that he hasn't really needed to announce. All of these other candidates who are announcing they're running for president, they need the headlines that they need to galvanize their race. Walker hasn't needed that. So there's no real political pressure either. He could announce in 2 weeks and he'd be fine. He could announce in a month and he would be fine. So the political pressure to get this done on his part isn't there anymore.
Back to the transportation issue, and this is for any of you. There has been a real split among Republicans about how to deal with this. Robin Voss, the Assembly Speaker the other day, said that he was willing maybe to have no new borrowing for roads, which might mean that the Zoo Interchange, major project in the state, biggest interchange in the state, busiest.
And important to us because we drive on it.
Really important to us because we drive on it every day.
These days.
Yeah. might get delayed. So
so we're panicked.
We're worried about that. So how do they resolve that transportation issue? That just seems like a really tough one. They don't want to raise taxes.
But they want to build roads. I mean, that's every year. Every 2 years, that's the big issue.
Right.
Do you want to build roads? You're very interested in building roads if you're a Republican. At the same time,
as
you don't
want
to raise taxes.
Truth.
And the solution has traditionally been to borrow money because everybody seems to be comfortable with that. But that's happened so much that some people are pushing back and saying we shouldn't be borrowing as much. So for a while, there was alternatives. We were looking at other ways to raise money. But there's no clear-cut solution.
Three words, Dave. Road delays ahead. So the only question here is the governor wants $1.3 billion of bonding for the roads fund. Right now, I just do not see the support there for that full amount, particularly in the Senate. I am hearing between $300 and $800 million of cuts or delays in road projects to bring that borrowing amount down. I've heard most senators seem to be at right now the $500 million mark, but there are a significant number of people that want $800 million. So we'll just see how that develops over
And it's not just that Republicans like to build roads. The road builders have been big-time financial supporters of Republicans.
And Governor Walker, especially.
And Governor Walker, right.
Well, both parties, to be fair, don't you think?
They've been very, very supportive of Governor Walker, and they've been very supportive of the Republican leadership that's there now. They do give to Democrats, particularly when they're in control. Mm-hmm. I mean, they primarily support the incumbent party, but they backed Walker from the beginning back in 2010. So there is that pressure in terms of making sure that there is some road construction in the budget.
Right.
And so it'll be somewhere between Voss's zero borrowing and Walker's 1.3 billion.
You think it's going to be somewhere in between the two?
It's somewhere in between the two, so that's a good range.
and let me just jump in, Dan, to say that at this point, the wild card, though, is that the road builders they're not asking for this borrowing. In fact, they're demanding that it come out.
They'd rather not have the borrowing. Yeah.
I think they feel like getting to the point where in 2 years where $1 out of $4 in the road fund goes to paying off borrowing is unsustainable in their view, and they think rather see.
All right, Jason Stein, thanks. We'll have to leave it there. On that, Jason's reporting can always be found at JS Online. He's covering the state budget, the arena deal, and many other things. Let's turn to another political story that's going to heat up this weekend, and that is the Democrats choosing a new leader. Dan, let me first turn to you on that. You've written a little bit about that. Kind of an interesting race so far.
Mike Tate has been the face of the party for the last 6 years, and part of that is by design. Governor Doyle wanted someone else out there to take some of the heat off of him, and Mike stepped in, became very vocal, and talk radio loves to beat up on him, and a number of conservatives like to beat up on him. And if they had their way, he would be serving another two-year term. But he's stepping down, and it's opened the floodgates. There are five people running for this. And basically, three of those five have a shot at winning. There's no clear-cut favorite, and I think most people looking at it would say that there's not an ideal candidate in there. You've got Jason Ray, who's a 28-year-old political consultant, a very young guy, but he's been active in the party for almost 14 years. You have Martha Lanning, who ran for the state Senate and lost. She's a newcomer to politics. In fact, she just joined the party for the first time last year, and this will be her first convention. But she has the support of one of the AFSCME units, and she has several legislators supporting her as well. Those would probably be the two front runners. And then sort of a blast from the past, Joe Winicky, who served as the Democratic Party chairman for two terms between 2005 and 2009, and was a state senator before that and has been active in party politics for 30-some years. He's sort of the dark horse in this race. Those are the three main candidates.
And former Congressman Dave Obie did endorse Jason. He said that he had planned not to endorse, but then some things came up that made him think that he should. It sounds like there's been some mudflinging and unkind words between them, so he jumped in.
It is. It's become much more like a regular political race.
It's real politics.
Between mainly the two main candidates, Jason Ray and Martha Lanning, which Joe Winicky's hoping that he emerges as sort of a Russ Feingold, where he slips through between the two. But those are the two candidates that everybody's focusing on right now. And it'd be two very different styles. Jason would probably keep things pretty much intact and similar to what Mike Tate was doing. Mike's not officially or publicly endorsed, but most people think he would like to see Jason win. Martha, on the other hand, has been very critical of how Tate ran things and the direction of the party. And, you know, you can't fault them. The party in the last few years has lost control of the legislature, lost a Senate seat, lost the governor's mansion.
Three times.
Right. Yeah. And yeah. So it's not been a good time for them. And everybody's scrambling to figure out what is the solution. Do we change the party somewhat, or do we need to change the party dramatically?
Mary, how important is a Democratic chair? I mean, in the vast scheme of things, how important is that?
You know, it's not like you're a public official in that you're elected to, like, the governorship, but, I mean, you set the tone for the party, you kind of determine the focus of it. Are you going to focus on opposition research? Are you going to, you know, be a bomb thrower? And I think a lot of that shapes, it's the behind-the-scenes work, the fundraising, obviously, is a huge portion that's...
And it's very different, but the way the Republicans and the Democrats structure things in the state. In the Republican Party, the chairman is a figurehead. He doesn't really do much, and all of us would probably struggle to come up with the name of the chairman of the Republican
Party.
Don't
ask me.
Brad Courtney's the answer. But
thank you.
but he doesn't really do a whole lot. On the other hand, the chairman of the Democratic Party is the face of the party. They're responsible for infrastructure, fundraising, and getting campaign strategy. And the
Picking
big issue is
yeah.
The big issue is do you fill every race or not, or do you focus on the major races? And that's a big issue.
So now let's move to some reader questions.
Our favorite part of the show.
Our favorite part of the show. So we have a reader who wrote that, in their opinion, the legislature should pass a bill that bans abortion after 20 weeks except to save the life of the mother and just let the courts fight it out. So is that where we're headed, Mary? What are the chances of this bill actually passing?
I think the chances are quite good. It's obviously a very conservative legislature. I know that some lawmakers have... You know, even Republican lawmakers have said that they would like to see exemptions for cases of rape or incest. Mm-hmm. That, you know, it's unclear.
Right now, that's not in the bill, though.
That's
right?
Not in the bill.
Right.
No, it's only if the life of the mother is in immediate danger.
Yeah. And the governor has supported the bill.
Yes, he's been saying he would sign it for weeks now, as is. So I think it has a very good chance of passing, with or without that exemption being added. And I think it will very certainly end up in the courts.
So the person asking the question is right. That's what's going to end up.
Yeah, it'll be in the courts.
Right.
And this is kind of a trend around the country, though, right? These kind of bills have come up in other legislatures in other states.
Yeah, and you know, people have complained, but a lot of these social issues are then being hashed out in the courts, whether it's same-sex marriage or abortion. Mm-hmm. The courts are the ones who are ultimately deciding the direction on these things.
So another question the reader asks, it seems to me that publicly financed arenas, like the one we've been talking about, are simply transfer of resources from the broad public sector to a narrow group of private entities, in this case, the Bucks ownership. So why do you think politicians continue to look for ways to make deals like this happen? Is it that they're just ignorant of what's happening, or are they putting certain interests ahead of the common good?
I think in this particular case, everyone realizes if the Bucks leave, they don't come back, because Milwaukee would not be on the list of the next places to go, but Seattle would be the place mm-hmm. where they went. And I don't think the governor, the mayor, or especially the county executive, who is a season ticket holder to the Bucks, would like to have it on their watch that the major professional NBA team leaves. And I think that's a major concern. Plus, the concept here is that they're building an entire, as Tom was talking about, an entire area to revitalize part of downtown. That area right now is an incredibly dead area. I mean, it's a dead zone in Milwaukee. There's nothing going on there. So for them, they're thinking, we're going to borrow $250 million and the results should be, some sort of revitalization of downtown.
And Governor Walker said this morning it's more expensive for them to leave, like losing the NBA player salaries, having, a vacant arena.
Ongoing cost of maintenance there as well.
The cost to taxpayers for them to leave is greater than for them to stay.
But it's a fair question. I mean, because the people who benefit largely we have billionaire owners, and I've been waiting for them to step up and to say that they're going to contribute more toward this, toward the arena. Right now it's $250 million by the current owners and former owner Herb Cole, $250 million by the public. And while everybody worries and focuses about the $250 million by the public, the owners haven't really said. They've locked in, stayed at $250 million, and they've made no adjustment on that. If there is any movement on this or any further controversy, that's where there's going to be some changes.
Right. So one last question related to Governor Walker. The question is, how does Governor Walker get away with campaigning around the country and internationally when he hasn't declared his running? Isn't this the same thing that Jeb Bush has done?
He can do it because he doesn't have to announce that he's running. He's got this nonprofit, Our American Revival.
Is there an advantage, though, in terms of donations and politically for him wait?
You can give an unlimited amount to this nonprofit, and once he starts running, there is a cap on how much you can give. And the big advantage is he doesn't have to announce right now because he gets as much attention as he wants, and sometimes a little bit too much attention, but as people parse every word that he mm-hmm. says right now. Whereas if you're a second or third tier candidate, most of them have announced already because they needed the bump, they needed that public attention.
He said he's not even testing the waters yet because that would essentially make it him subject to campaigning.
And I saw the Tampa Bay Times described him as a presidential candidate, and there was a complaint from the campaign. He's yet to decide whether he's thinking about running or not. He's clearly running. It's just that he doesn't need to make an announcement right now, so he's not doing it.
Well, listen, that's it for this edition of On Politics. Let me thank our guests, Mary Spokusa, Dan Bice in Milwaukee, Jason Stein in Madison. Look for us here at the same time next Thursday, or check us out for the audio version of the show at the iTunes Store. I'm David Haynes. So long, everybody.